We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the NFL Pick 6 Show, week number 4. Just got the tweet out right in time, got boys, so feel free to give it the old retweet. Appreciate y'all listening to us live on a Wednesday night, 9 o'clock on the dot. As usual, Rich Rebar, Shark Football Analysis. We got John Daigle, 4 for 4, Bet Spurts as well. Daigle, forward-thinking show, obviously. Do you have any thoughts as far as week 3, week 1 through 3? Anything NFL-wise you want to get out before we dive in and knock out the show?
I didn't go homeless in week 3. That's always a plus. I lived in the rebar territory of getting $6 back. That's always good. It was just an interesting week because the cumulative ownership on the winning lineups was absurd. Like less than 40% rostered across entire lineups because they stacked the Patriots-Ravens game that I actually got on. I was fearless enough to get on, but if you could imagine playing all the wrong players from a game that went over 50 points, boy, did I cover my ground quite well with no Devontae Parker and thinking if everyone was going to play Marcus Mariota in a spin down opportunity, I was going to spin down for Mac Jones with the wrong receivers. So nearly got there. We're nearly getting there. We're seeing though early on that DFS lineups through week 3 are just fearless this year. Like there is no more anticipatory stats. It is literally screw your matchups. If this player has the highest ceiling, you're playing them. And so I think we're learning more and more as we go on.
At least you don't have to play Mac Jones this week. Mac Jones unavailable. Looks like it's going to be Brian Hoyer.
Those deep throws were good, though. They were hot.
We're probably going to get Zach Wilson back. It seems to be going to be back and against Pittsburgh for what it's worth. We're monitoring some running back injuries. Well, it looks like very likely that Swift and Montgomery are going to be out. More so on DK, the pricing is pretty friendly for Jamal Williams and Khalil Herbert. FanDuel, bumped them up, but they're still obviously pretty well positioned. Rich, any thoughts as far as week 3? Anything that you think is worth focusing on, or you want to dive in and break down the show?
No, let's spin it forward, baby.
Yeah, if this is your first time here, if you don't know how the show works, Pick 6. We focus on 3 games, 3 main games. We focus on the main slate. If you're wondering why we're not talking about the Dolphins or the Bengals or the Vikings or the Saints or San Fran or the Rams or the Chiefs or the Bucks, because we're focusing on the main slate. We focus on 3 main games, break them down from all different angles, then we run it back, give our favorite plays position by position amongst players that are not participating in those 3 main games. And, game number 1, let's just dive right on in. Number 1 game on the slate, the Jags, the surprising Jags at Philadelphia, 47 is the total. Jags are 6-point dogs here. The old Doug Peterson revenge game. Daigle, you're the one, you're always our guy as far as who decides what games we focus on. And, I will yield to you as far as kicking this off, Jacksonville and Philadelphia. Where do you want to start as far as this game?
Let's start with the Eagles side because what this show is becoming is a more emphasized version of what it was last year, because right now through three games in the NFL, what we're seeing is NFL teams are averaging just 21 points per game, down from both 2020 and 2021. 68% of games in Vegas sports books the first 2 weeks went under, an incredible total. Yards per carry are up this year compared to the last 2 years, because defenses are now allowing teams to run on them for more plays per drive, knowing in that case with two high safeties that are limiting opposing offenses just exploding over the top of them, which is also why cover one is being used man coverage at its lowest rate in the last 2 years. And because everything is now being kept underneath in a copycat league, you're seeing the quarterback scoring become the highest margin it's been. And it's only three games. It could very much even back out in regression, but it's so far apart. Hurts, who we're about to talk about, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are averaging a combined 34 DraftKings points per game. The next closest, Carson Wentz and Patrick Mahomes, are averaging 24 points individually, nearly 10 fewer per game than these other three guys who just continue lapping the field. And so that's why we come back to Hurts and then questioning the validity of Jacksonville's defense as well, because now we've seen through three games, Carson Wentz, who a good matchup for Jacksonville, will still spike 28 fantasy points against them. Matt Ryan in that horrific spot that Rebar warned everyone about in week two. And then injured Justin Herbert last week, who lost both center Corey Linsley and left tackle Rashawn Slater in game. So I still have enough questions about Jacksonville's defense to wonder if they can actually temper Jalen Hurts and the double stack we want to go for in Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown. So, of course, I love Hurts a ton this week.
Yeah, you teased that Buffalo-Baltimore game. Of course, we'll be talking about that one soon enough as well with Lamar versus Allen. That's probably the premier game on the slate. Two of the best quarterbacks. Hurts probably the other one. Rich, your thoughts as far as – I mean, Hurts looks phenomenal. You know, Daigle's talking about double stacking. Oh, is it automatically Brown and Smith? I guess Goddard's in the conversation as well, too. Knocks out the tight end, which is a little bit weaker this week, the absence of Kelsey on the main slate. If you have all the funds in the world, of course, you want to get yourself some Andrews. Hurts, your favorite pass catchers for Jalen Hurts are Brown and Smith, probably. But what about lineup construction and salary?
Yeah, it's those guys. I mean, what you love about Jalen Hurts right now is that, you know, this is the happy learned how to putt, you know, kind of, you know, portion of Jalen Hurts' career. He's winning in structure. He had two rushing points last week and was the QB2 in fantasy points on the week. The run out's been great, but this is what you want good players to do when they have soft matchups, right? That's the one thing with the Jaguars D too, is like, yeah, they had those two scenarios that it's like tough to gauge what they really are, but they also smash those spots too. So it's like, it is kind of one of those things. Like you want to, it's like, where does the credit fall on a small sample? We'll know a lot this week, you know, for sure. But yeah, it's definitely Arthur Juan and definitely Devontae Smith. I mean, it feels like that goose egg Devontae Smith had was like another season, right? Like in week one. Absolutely was a demon last week, making just absolutely ridiculous catches because he's a really good football player. You know, who knows? Who knew that the Heisman Trophy winner, the first wide receiver to win the Heisman Trophy in like 30 years, is a good football player. But yeah, it's those two guys. They're just commanding so many targets in the offense. I love Goddard. I love the big playability he has at a tight end position that just lacks big playability. But like, he's just not getting targets at all. It's just all going to these two wide receivers. He's been targeted on just 14% of his routes. That's 23rd among tight ends. I would love for him to pop. I mean, maybe he fits here because, like you said, tight end is just once again another cesspool. I saw people like Victor lapping, like, oh, Tyler Conklin's the tight end three. You know what Tyler Conklin being the tight end three tells me is that there's two good tight ends. that's where we are right now. And one of them isn't on this slate. So if you want to go ahead and take a shot on at least a player that has inherent upside, you know, that's, you know, averaging a lot of yards for catching a lot of yards per target, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and obviously the ground, the carries for Hurts, yeah, builds that floor, which is lovely. No less than 9 carries in the season. I think he's got 3 touchdowns on the ground as well. John, what do we do with this backfield as far as Philadelphia? It's kind of a mess. Like, again, you're not exactly sure who's going to run the ball, and sometimes the quarterback's going to vulture it too. They are theoretically going to be ahead here, but do we trust anything here? Sanders, I know, was a guy that was played last week. Otherwise, just kind of a mess. Are we excited about anything on the Philadelphia side when it comes to running backs?
For me, it's always the same, and if I want a piece of this offense, and I do, but I cannot afford to get up to Hurts plus his receivers, I will then take the out in tournaments and try to leverage off to their rushing touchdowns. And if you're going to do that, it has to be Miles Sanders, who continues to be used much more heavily than both Kenneth Gainwell and Boston Scott. Sanders' backfield touch rate has increased now at 73% the past 2 weeks, but a season high 76% this past week. 16 touches to Kenneth Gainwell's 3, just for reference, who was the next closest back on the team. And so if you want to try to sneak it in, I think that's totally fine. But DraftKings in particular, you already mentioned FanDuel. DraftKings this week is super interesting because, unlike previous weeks, you could kind of do whatever you want this week. If you try to double stack the Bills, it gets a little expensive since that's what everyone's going to do. But overall, we're seeing prices temper on running backs in particular. And thus, we can now just kind of have the field to play with. So I don't think you need to get there, honestly. And it's not something I'll be prioritizing because the matchup doesn't really scream anything that stands out.
You know, I ran some optimals pre-show Wednesday night, yada, 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 grain of salt, things change. And I thought that too. I was thinking, oh, maybe the optimals are going to give me Hurts, or they're going to give me Allen, or they're going to give me Lamar or something like that.
Can I guess?
Yeah. Oh boy. I mean, it's go for it. You're probably going to guess it right.
I don't know, but the only cheap down really seems Mariota.
So
are you a Geno Goff?
There you go.
Oh yeah, Goff is a little more less expensive. You're right. Yeah.
I ran 100 optimals on DK and 65% Geno Smith.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what are we expecting? 49 points in that game, and it's Detroit, and Detroit's been a sieve, and it's in a dome, and yada, yada. Supposedly, Geno's going to cook or going to be allowed to get some, at least some ingredients. Mariota 17% for what it's worth. Hurts 8%. Yep. Carr 5. Allen 1. Lamar 1. Which, you know, again, Wednesday night. And on FanDuel, different story. FanDuel, the number one guy is Hurts at 61%, Geno 22.
I had to stricken that game from the list once I saw Detroit's injury report. It's only Wednesday, but there are a lot of question marks we need to worry about in Detroit right now.
Yeah, I do wonder because, you know, the point they go off the show, just the way that fantasy scoring is this year, is if we're going to start to see these guys be, you know, close to 9K on DraftKings and, you know, over 9 on FanDuel, you know, kind of moving forward, like these three main guys, because that's kind of where we're immediately trending towards.
So, John, who are the run backs on the Jacksonville side? I assume Kirk is probably the most appealing option, all things being equal.
Kirk is – it's just interesting, this matchup for the Jaguars, because we've seen Doug Peterson transform this offense into one that logically the Jaguars can move the ball down the field. Lawrence has the league's highest completion rate the past 2 weeks, and you can attribute most of that because he has a 6.5-yard depth of target, right? He's in the Geno Smith territory right now, and that only Tom Brady is getting rid of the ball quicker from snap to throw than Trevor Lawrence. It's basically a one-read offense, and we know Jonathan Gannon historically just runs cover 2 and cover 3. And what they've done the past 2 games, because the logical answer is Christian Kirk. But the past 2 games, Zay Jones in particular has seen his ADOT fall from 10-yard depth of target in week 1 to just 5-yard depth of target the past 2 games, cannibalizing Evan Ingram, but at the same time having a higher floor because they're now feeding him targets shallower to the line of scrimmage. And so it's an interesting spot for either. Maybe if you want an out at tight end, he's 3,400 Ingram, for instance, on DraftKings, you can go there. But overall, Christian Kirk probably has the highest ceiling, but Zay Jones, if you need to sneak by a wide receiver, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And a distinct amount of savings, too. Looking at DK, Zay Jones, 4.2K. A lot of targets last week. They paid him. They paid him for a reason. 4.2 for Zay. And what is it? Kirk's 6.6. So, the money obviously matters. We live in the world of a salary cap. Rich, your thoughts as far as the Jags, and we even saw Marvin Jones. I believe he got in the touchdown. He got in the box too. So good for him.
Yeah, they all got one. This is a big litmus test for me for to go like on the Jags. You know, last week was a huge step forward against the Chargers, although they were missing multiple pieces defensively too, as well as offensively. But this is kind of what I'm looking for, like to get serious with the Jags, and especially with Trevor Lawrence himself. You know, Trevor Lawrence didn't really play well in week 1, plays really solidly the past 2 weeks. Now he gets probably his toughest matchup of the season. Now I want to see how he handles it. The last 2 weeks, You know, the last two defenses he's faced have just basically lived in cover three. Our guy Gus Bradley, and then, you know, Brandon Staley, you know, basically, you know, almost same lineage of what they call defenses. As, you know, Trevor Lawrence has faced cover three and 50% of his dropbacks. He's 28 of 32, 10 yards per pass attempt against cover three. The Eagles play almost no cover three. They basically stay in man, or that Fangio, Jonathan Gannon, cover four, cover six. They are second in the NFL behind the Vikings in cover four and cover six, that Fangio style defense. And those are the two areas where Lawrence has struggled the most. And it's early in the season, small sample, but against man coverage, he is 18th in EPA per dropback, 5.7 yards per pass attempt. Against cover four and cover six, those Fangio looks, he's also really struggled with just 6.6 yards per pass attempt. So, you know, this is a big test for me. And obviously this is the best defensive line that he's faced so far to start the year. So if the Jags get over here and they look like they did the last 2 weeks, I mean, this is going to be kind of a wheels up situation for the rest of the year. We can kind of really, really believe in this team, you know, kind of moving forward. Fine with both, either wide receivers, if you want to say salary, it's fine. Zay Jones, actually, from an expected fantasy stance, is he has more expected fantasy points than Christian Kirk on the season. So, I mean, Kirk's run a little hot with his output. Obviously, I don't think he's going to score a touchdown every game for the rest of the season. But yeah, both those guys are on pretty even keel, you know, opportunity wise from like a, you know, target perspective. So I don't really have any problem. You can get a lot of options here. It's mostly just like, how much do you really want to believe in the Jaguars, and could they be a trap? I think the probably the most fascinating part of them is the backfield situation, right? Like the Eagles, you know, you look at the Eagles and we talk about Miles Sanders, the Eagles have never trailed like at all the entire season. So yeah, it's just been the Miles Sanders show. Like, we don't know if the Eagles fall behind, does Kenneth Gainwell play more? And this is where we kind of are with the Jaguars, right? The Jaguars haven't trailed at all the last 2 weeks. And, you know, and as a byproduct, it's been kind of all James Robinson. You know, what happens if they fall behind? You know, we saw Travis Etienne play a lot more in the passing game in week one when they were pushing the football in kind of comeback mode a little bit. So does he end up playing a little more this week too if the Jaguars fall behind? So there's a lot of still where we're working with a very small sample. A lot of these teams have been typically in like one game script that like for the first 3 weeks, and we'll talk about Cleveland next. They're another team that's just been in one game script the entire season. And what happens when we start to see teams build out some of the sample being in different scenarios?
Yeah, I was taking a peek at the Philadelphia schedule. I don't know if you guys looked that far ahead.
Oh, we looked at it in the summer, baby.
Yeah.
We
looked at it when Jalen Hurts was 40-1 to win MVP. Yeah.
Somebody tell me when they're losing. I know it's the NFL and any team can be any team and any given Sunday and yada, yada. Jacksonville, stop me when they're going to lose a game. At Arizona, Dallas, Pittsburgh, at Houston, Washington, at Indy, Green Bay, home, Tennessee. Stop me whenever they're going to lose a game. Giants, Bears.
Stopped you.
At Dallas, home versus New Orleans, at, versus the Giants. That's week 18. That was the whole schedule. Is that they run the table? I know, you know, overreaction city, but they're favored in every one of those games right now.
I mean, this is the part of why everyone thought they were one of the best bets in the NFC to, you know, be one to have the best record and potentially represent the Super Bowl. It's why they became trendy as things went on and more things happened in Dallas over the course of the offseason.
Now, it doesn't always work out like this, Dean. Like, the Bears had the fourth easiest projected schedule, and you see how that's going right now. They are 2-1, so they are getting by on that schedule, but also, like, that offense is not something we're counting on. So it doesn't always pan out like Jalen Hurts' potential MVP odds.
Yeah, I mean, this team is loaded, though. Like, it would all fall off. Like, Hurts playing in structure the way he is, like, if this is sustainable and this is the player that the step of growth he's gonna make, this was always the thing. I mean, this is one of the best offensive line in the NFL. It's one of the deepest, you know, defensive front rotations. They've got a great secondary. They obviously trade for Arthur Juan after drafting Devontae. Like, this team is loaded from a talent perspective.
Also, Rich hinted at game script for Jaguars, and that's kind of what brings me to maybe sneaking in Travis Etienne on DraftKings in particular. I still have to play around a bit. We may lose Christian McCaffrey this week. We have to wait on Jonathan Taylor's toe injury, but it may be a week we're playing median priced running backs anyhow. If that's the case, it's worth noting Etienne has the Jaguars have run a pass play on 87% of the 31 third and fourth downs he's played this year. Like, when he's on the field on conversion downs, it is a passing down. Thus, it is negative game script. And if you were expecting the Eagles to put the pain on the Jaguars, like, that's the run back here, not James Robinson.
You guys mentioned the Bears being 2-1. John, who's the most fraudulent 2-1 team? Because there's a lot of options.
You just said it. I mean,
is it the Bears?
It is the Bears. The Giants also have an easy schedule too, though. That's the thing.
They play this weekend.
Yeah.
How come that game's not here?
No one's going to be proven a fraud.
Somebody's going to be 3-1.
No, we're not talking about the Giants and the Bears. Well, we're gonna talk about the Bears when we get the position plays. Don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll have to talk about the running back situation. It looks like, at least on DK, Herbert's going to be pretty popular, I imagine, over there.
He's good, man. Herbert is awesome at the game. He's a good little player.
Yeah, and that team does not choose to throw the ball, so he's going to see the ball a fair bit, I imagine.
Even when they're down by 3 scores, they don't want to throw the ball. You're right.
It is a very weird – they have that 1930s playbook or something there in Chicago, but, hey, they're 2-1, I suppose.
It's the first time since Tim Tebow led Broncos that a team's completed single-digit passes 3 games in a row. And if go a fourth straight game, it would be the first time since 1978 when they changed, like, the passing rules.
Wait, they've not completed double-digit passes yet in this season?
No, not in a game.
Oh, my God. So bad. And they were, like, getting walloped in one game at least, right? The one game?
They were down 17 at the half against the Packers, and they called 17 runs to 7 passes in the second half.
Oh, my God. That was a national TV game, I believe. I feel like it was.
To be fair to all this, because it is funny when you talk about these numbers, but, like, to be fair, like, they're, like, elite at running the football, though. Like, they've been amazing at running the football. It's not like they're just, like, doing what Mike Vrabel's doing, where they're just handing the ball to Derrick Henry and he's tipping over every 2 yards. Like, the Bears, at least, for as much as I want to say, like, this is not how I would run a team, they're at least just popping huge plays off in the run game.
And yeah. I don't think it's his first read, but Justin Herbert's natural read is to literally just launch the ball 40 yards downfield, which he's not good at. So, like, they're just taking the ball out of his hands every snap.
You mean Fields, right? Just to confirm?
Fields, yeah. Sorry, Fields.
Yeah, Herbert can launch the ball.
That's actually how
we wish he would throw it 40 yards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we want that to be a natural read, but it's not.
We good moving on? I think we're moving on, right?
Yeah.
Cleveland, Atlanta, 49.5 is the total here. Cleveland looks like a 1.5 point favorite here in the dome in Atlanta. Rich, your current stopping grounds. Cleveland, talk to me about the Browns.
Well, I mean, it's pretty good run out. They faced Joe Flacco, Mitchell Trubisky, and Baker Mayfield. It's kind of what you want, right? Now they're going to face Marcus Mariota in a dome, who, by the way, we'll get to Atlanta, but, like, yeah, Atlanta's fun. These two teams, though, I mean, like, you look at these are efficient offenses. They are two of the top 5 teams in rate of drives that reach the red zone so far. Cleveland's second in scoring rate per drive in the NFL so far to start the season. So, like, this game is definitely a game that could even go over still. We could definitely be in the 50s here. Now, the only thing getting our way here is both of these teams love to run the football. And if they're not running it, you know, with hyper efficiency, then we're talking about eating play clock. And maybe that's how this game ends up going under. But yeah, both these teams have been really efficient so far offensively. And Atlanta's done it against two good defenses. You know, the Saints have a good defense and the Rams have a pretty good defense. And they still, like, this is a team that's giving you all kinds of multiple looks. They're obviously using the pistol more than any team in the NFL. They run a lot of full house backfield stuff. Like, they're doing a lot of unique things that they couldn't do with Matt Ryan last year and they can do with the mobile quarterback. And it's made their offensive line inherently better, which is trash objectively. You know, Marcus Mariota is not really getting pressured just because the ball is, you know, coming out in unique settings and they're not really taking a bunch of, like, intermediate shots. So it's, like, kind of a fun offense, and this game could be fun altogether. But it's always going to be, like, coming through the run game with the Browns. And, you know, that's all just been Nick Chubb so far to start the year, over 100 yards in every game. But, you know, you got to get in the box with Nick Chubb. He's expensive. I think he's the most expensive running back on FanDuel main slate this week. And you think about last week, he was so good. And if he doesn't score a touchdown, you got 10 points. Like, you know, so that's where we are with him. I hate playing running backs like this when they're really expensive and they're going to be kind of relatively popular. And I think that's what we're going to have with Chubb.
Why is Patterson not catching the ball anymore?
They did this last year with him, too. Like, when he took over and was just the full-time running back, you know, they really didn't target the running. It's not like they're not – it's not just him being involved. They're not targeting any of the running backs, right? It's a shallow passing tree. They don't throw a lot, and they're really only throwing the ball to 2 players anyways, Drake London and Kyle Pitts. But yeah, we wish he was catching the football a bit more. We saw this last year, though, too, with Arthur Smith.
He's actually running a route on more dropbacks, 47%, than he was in the first nine games before his ankle injury last year, 42%. And yet he's only seen two targets the past 2 weeks. And it's like Rich said, because Mariota has targeted this backfield at the league's fourth lowest rate among running backs. So, yeah, it's literally just the Drake London, Kyle Pitts show, one of them who we just bitch about every week.
Who are you going to bitch about this week? Who do you prefer? Who's going to disappoint us amongst those two?
I'm still team Drake London here. London's floor he showed us so far is a 21% target share from week one. Everyone makes a big deal about Kyle Pitts' 40% target share last week, but London was right there with 30% of the team's targets only 1 week after he recorded 46% of Atlanta's targets. London has also out-targeted Pitts 25-18 overall on the season. The issue with Kyle Pitts is, and I mean, Rich has already yelled about this in length, but now we're seeing it more and more this year that it's just prayer yards is what's happening here. 33% of his targets have come 20 yards downfield, and Marcus Mariota has recorded the fifth lowest on-target rate among all quarterbacks on those types of throws downfield. So the ceiling is there for Pitts, but like the ceiling also entails the bottoming out, and that's what's happened in two games now.
You got to lean here, Rich, as far as London versus Pitts?
I mean, I would still say London just because he's been so good and we expect him to keep getting better. I mean, like Daigle said, like it's crazy that like Pitt's greatest gift is like arguably his greatest curse too, like for fantasy. Because when you have a player like Kyle Pitts, you want to use him the way that Arthur Smith is using him, right? Like inherently, because there's not a player like him, but he doesn't get enough free targets. He doesn't get enough bunnies. I mean, you look at him, like compare him to a guy like Mark Andrews, right? Who also gets a lot of deep targets in the Baltimore offense. You know, he's the second highest A dot behind Kyle Pitts, but he has 45% of his targets are short targets, 1 to 10 air yards. Kyle Pitts is at 38%, 32% of Mark Andrews targets on the intermediate levels, 11 to 19 yards. Kyle Pitts is just at 22%. So like, you're just not getting enough free, like easier completions. And that's kind of always been the burnout with Kyle Pitts, right? Like you love the air yards, you love the A dot, but like that stuff comes with a lower success rate too. So it is kind of, he's kind of like a product of like his own greatest attributes. And then when you put those in the situation where it's like a team that's going to throw 20 passes in a game, like you've got to make those targets count. And like, it's been less more. No, I don't understand the red zone stuff. The dude has one target in the red zone. So like, that's a whole nother bag we can get into, but like, that's the part that doesn't make any sense. But literally, Kyle Pitts' like greatest attribute's been like his biggest shortcoming in the NFL due to the environment he's in.
It's literally the difference what you're seeing between Chris Olave and DJ Chark right now. Like DJ Chark, everyone says is like one inch away from a big play. But that's because he's a downfield receiver who doesn't get volume. So every week he's volatile. Whereas Chris Olave is volatile, he's getting prayer yards, but when you get 13 targets per game, that's a lot of prayers that have an opportunity to be responded to. So just as many prayers as you can throw out to the world, you're going to do better.
The Pitts argument over London is just like opportunity cost. He does not have to do as well. His contemporaries are not as strong. London's got to beat a lot of other guys, basically, mm-hmm. to be more relevant, I suppose. That's kind of my argument that why I would lean Pitts just – but like, who's going to get more fantasy points? Probably London, but that's not really the question because right. a lot of construction matters as well. Go ahead.
Is it? Yeah, you're about to answer my question. I think Pitts will naturally be higher rostered as he is every week over London. But yes, I would love to hear your projection on it.
No. I wasn't going that way. I was going with the pace of the game. But you're right, just because again, there's not a lot of great options when it comes to tight ends and like TJ Hockenson looks like he's gonna be really popular this week. You know, in the dome against Seattle, he's pretty cheap on DK. He's popping, and if you have the money, if you want to splurge, you want to go for the big boy number. Andrews, of course, and we'll be talking about that game soon enough. Buffalo versus Baltimore, you know, that's the game that's most likely to shoot out. I was going to pull up, again, shout out Derek Hardy and the Blitz, the game plays. He talks about how many plays that are projected for this game, and if you throw the Miami-Cincinnati game out, which is currently projected for the least on the entire slate, but again, that's Thursday night. Who cares about Thursday? This game is projected for the least amount of plays on the slate. Lots of running, obviously, which, you know, it certainly you can get there. It can happen. Chubb can break one off for 80. Who cares? You know, they can run the ball for a while after that and run some clock. But I never really know, man. Daigle deciding between the running back, between these two, and Hunt. And it's just – I just have a hard time picking these Cleveland running backs, Chubb and Hunt. And Hunt's, you know, can certainly break them off, but he's got to get in the box several times. certainly he can. It's tough because he's just got his route to get there is just trickier than others.
And Trouble only has one more carry inside the 10 than Hunt this year. Hunt is averaging 15 touches per game. That's a number he's received in three consecutive games. Even for the play volume projection, though, like Rich said, these teams are relying on efficiency. And as someone who drafted the Browns defense in every redraft league, I will tell you, like, the Browns defense right now is one, banged up, and two, overrated. That's why I kind of like the Falcons offense here, too. Like, Mariota is one of only four quarterbacks in the league averaging 10 air yards per attempt, because teams are, well, and now we've seen through three games, teams are chucking it on Cleveland without any fear. They've actually allowed the third most receiving yards on throws 15-plus yards downfield, and that's to the murderer's row of Baker Mayfield, Joe Flacco, and Mitch Trubisky. So, like, they have actually have, I say their first real test, it is Marcus Mariota, but they have their real, like, first test in efficiency here. So, like, it could go either way. Like, maybe Mariota fails, but maybe this game just pops off in favor of the Falcons.
I guess we're not certain about Myles Garrett. I know he was in that car crash.
Thankfully, there's no way he's playing. Did you see the body cam footage? Like, I don't think there's any way he's playing. We also don't know if Clowney's going to play. We have a relatively, small sample here, but, just going back to last year, with neither Garrett or Clowney on the field, the Browns are 31st in pressure rate. With Garrett off the field, they're also 31st in pressure rate, just Myles Garrett. When both are in the lineup, they're second in the NFL in pressure rate. So, like, these are difference-making players that matter, if the Browns are going to be missing these guys defensively. And you talk about Mariota, being able to utilize some of that stuff that we're doing. Like, he's averaging 11.5 yards per pass attempt out of the pistol, and when they don't use the pistol, it's 6.6 yards.
Unreal.
So it's how they're getting all their shot plays. If Garrett or Clowney are both off the field, I would say Garrett has to be an absolute long shot, just judging by, dude, his car flipped over like multiple times. Like, if you check out the body cam footage, like, he could barely stand. Like, I would be shocked if this dude plays this week. If he does, then, like, these dudes are just like, we already know they're like superhumans on another level, but, like, he's absolutely just a metahuman if he can play in this game after what happened.
If you can pick one of the, skill players here, Patterson, London, and Pitts, who's your preference amongst those three, Rich?
I mean, it would depend. I'd have to check to see kind of what, like, everything is looking at in terms of rostership. I would definitely want to take Pitts for the deep shot plays, like Daigle said. But, like, if he's going to be more popular, maybe you go London. I think the Browns passing game is pretty good leverage, too, in this game. Obviously, Chubb looking at his pricing. But Amari Cooper is on an absolutely hellbender the last 2 weeks, too. I mean, he now leads the NFL in share of team air yards. And this is all coming. Amari's gone over 100 yards and a touchdown last 2 weeks in games where the Browns have never trailed. Like, what happens if they have to start throwing the ball? He's the only guy. Like, Amari Cooper is what everyone thought they were getting in DJ Moore. Like, this is what's happening. Like, you're getting – this is the guy. Like, this is what you're – and if they have to throw – they haven't had to throw yet. It's kind of a one-man band. We saw Njoku come alive on Thursday for the first time after they just didn't throw to him at all the first 2 weeks. Man, I benched him in, like, three FFPC
leagues. Yeah, we all did. Yeah.
And, Jesus, man. Like, the dude had, like, 30 points over there. But so if that's sticky, too, with his routes, I mean, he's in play, too. So the Browns' passing game is pretty decent because – we talk about Mariota being kind of like a fun fantasy guy, but Jacoby Brissett has been legitimately like a good NFL quarterback the last 2 weeks in the NFL. He's now what? He's top 10 in EPA and per dropback. Obviously, structure of offense is really helping that, and who they're playing has helped that. But the passing game here for the Browns could be one of the leverage points too.
It's also been, as you said, honed down since week one. Like, we got that blip on the radar with a 32% target share from Donovan Peoples-Jones. And then the last two games, Amari Cooper and Njoku have hoarded 62% of the team's targets. Like, there's no one else to go to outside of these two. So it's actually pretty condensed if you're thinking about getting cute and finding ways to stack this game as well.
Pulling up the ownership now, you kind of referenced it before there, John, as far as this game specifically. I happen to have, we got DK pulled up right now. All right, just give me 1 second. And Wednesday night, bear that in mind, obviously, grain of salt, but I'm curious. Pitts, DK, Pitts 5K is about 11%. Cooper at 10-ish%, 6.3K is the asking price.
London David Njoku's the question because he's only 3,700 on DraftKings. And, like, we will have to ask ourselves, how many people will go down knowing Njoku's cheap off recency bias compared to Kyle Pitts, how many people will spend up for him.
It felt like they were obviously forcing passes his way. Like there was what, three or four passes in a row, it seemed like, on one drive.
That first drive was meant just to get people out of Arthur Smith's mentions. That's all he did that for.
I mean, first play of the game, he had a 75-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Mariota missed him. As I said, the gift and the curse, all in one play.
Patterson at 6%, interesting. And, like, it's Cleveland. Nobody really knows what to do with those running backs. They just kind of ignore them typically. 6% for Chubb and 5% for Hunt. That's where we're at right now on a Wednesday night. We got anything else here, John, or shall we move on?
I think that's about it.
Rich?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. This is the main event, right? Buffalo at Baltimore, 51.5 is the total, highest total on the board. Buffalo, 3-point favorites. We talked about it last week, by the way. The humidity, man. The humidity in Miami is undefeated. You saw it all over Buffalo. That team was exhausted. Diggs was exhausted. Allen was exhausted. They were all exhausted. Big W for Miami. The Dolphins fans are really excited down here in South Florida. Buffalo in Baltimore this week, two premier quarterbacks, some premier pairings. You know, this is not going to sneak up on anybody here, John, but which side do you want to start? What quarterback do you prefer out the gate? Either way, you can't really go wrong.
I have more questions about Baltimore's side than I do the Bills. Gosh, this game is just insanity. Even if you remove, well, yeah, for Lamar Jackson, it's interesting because I'm curious to see how the Bills play him because historically he has struggled against the blitz. But we also know the Bills haven't blitzed this year. They've only blitzed on 8 snaps all season. And what we've seen is that 6 touchdowns have come, 6 of Lamar's 10 touchdowns this year have come against the blitz. And if they just stay, the Bills, with this third highest pressure rate in the league, sending 4 rushers, knowing they can get pressure that way, I'm just curious to see what happens because 65% of Lamar's attempts have come against 4-man rushes, and he's only completed 57% of those passes since he's been taking advantage of one-on-one coverage and wide-open players. And so, again, we didn't learn anything about the Bills, in my opinion, since they ran 90 plays and they still lost. Like, with 2 guys going down to injury and Kumaro and Stephon Diggs and 2 guys playing half the game basically because they were cramping from dehydration. We know our assessment on the Bills from week 3 stayed the same in week 4, in my opinion. That's why I love to talk to Rich about the stuff. But as for the Ravens, like, we don't know since defenses has kind of been playing the same through 3 games. So it makes an interesting spot at least to put the onus on the Baltimore more than anything.
Rich, Baltimore?
Yeah, I mean, well, the Bills haven't blitzed at all this year. Like, they're not blitzing at all. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to start blitzing now, especially with the amount of injuries that they had. I mean, they're going to have a kind of bit of a rotation this week. Obviously, they lost another cornerback in Christian Benford to a hand injury last week. That's why they went and signed Xavier Rhodes the start of this week. I don't know how much he'll play. We'll see if he gets on the field because it looks like Dane Jackson is going to come back after, you know, he missed last week after the scary hit on Monday night. They also were missing 2 of their best pass rushers last week in Ed Oliver and Jordan Phillips. We'll see which one of those guys comes back or if either come back. Will they get Jordan Porter back? There's like a lot of just moving parts with the Bills, yeah, like defensively, mm-hmm, to try to figure out what's going on. They did have a lot through all those changes last week, and they did allow 10 yards per pass attempt to 2 on the small sample of plays that they actually ran in that game. But yeah, I mean, Lamar is one of these guys just running so hot. I thought last week was like a pretty like strong regression spot, and nope, he did not. The Belichick blitzed his ass off and he got toasted the entire game, man. You know, right now he's 39 points over expectation in fantasy scoring through 3 weeks. The next closest guy is Tua, who's at 15. So he's like almost triple the next highest quarterback in points scored over expectation. You would think there'd be some regression. He currently has a touchdown rate of 11.5%. right now, which is pretty bananas. 17% of his completions have gone for touchdowns.
Wow.
It's just bonkers. And obviously it's small sample 3 weeks, but yeah, I mean, you would think that they're going to get a lot of zone coverage here, a lot more shell coverage than they've gotten so far through the first 3 weeks. I'm more curious to see, like, on the other side, how do they fix what's going on defensively? because, you know, it was a thing last year where the Ravens used, like, all right, you have no bodies. Wink Martindale doesn't care. He's going to put all these guys on islands. They're not doing that this year. The last 2 weeks, they've rolled their starters out. You might say against Miami, some of these guys didn't really practice the full week and it hurt them. But, like, Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Williams, like Chuck Clark, these are their starters. These are their guys that they're counting on in the secondary. And last week, like, it wasn't Tyreek Hill running past them. It wasn't Jalen Waddle running past them. They gave up 8 pass plays of 20 or more yards to an offense that's helmed by Mac Jones, Matt Patricia, and Devontae Parker's out here looking like 1994 Herman Moore. Like, what is going on? Like, this defense is just – it's been abysmal. And it's – and they've got their guys back. Like, these are the guys they're counting on. These are brand-name players that they have in their secondary playing. And they're getting absolutely toasted. And you're going to bring that to the house against Josh Allen? Like, man, it's not looking good.
Even if you remove week 2 against Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill, the Ravens have allowed the most receiving yards per game to opposing wide receivers. That's how bad it's been.
Shout out Herman Moore. Like, that brings me back. We're showing our age in that one. But, like, that's back in the Wayne Fonts days, isn't it? I feel like.
Oh, yeah, him and, you know, Brett Perryman, the original Perryman. But I was trying to think of another, like, tall, like, physical, lanky dude that's like Devontae Parker.
That works. I think that works for sure. By the way, Xavier Rhodes, he used to be, like, one of the top corners in the league. The NFL, man, life comes at you fast. He was just out of the league, I guess, only 32 years old, and that's that. And I guess he's still kind of hanging on. But
it's been going that direction for a couple of years, yeah.
Oh, man.
He tried to hang on with the Colts. It did not go well.
No. Oh, wow. There's so much good stuff in this game. You probably have this, Rich. I'm curious. Lamar, like, just as a running back, is he like running back 3 on the season?
I think he's like running back 10 or something on the year. But, man, he's now way past Vic for the most 100-yard rushing games for a quarterback. What do you want to say, man? He 2 weeks ago, he was an 80-yard touchdown. Last week, he goes over Bill. It's just insane, man. I mean, the fantasy ceiling, like, it's – like, right, the way he's playing right now is 2019-esque. Now let's just see if teams get religion and start saying, you know what, let's just stop blitzing him now.
So you want to pair him with Bateman? You want to pair him with Andrews, ideally? Which do you prefer? You want to go off the board somewhat for Duvernay or something like that? Who do you think is the best pairing, all things considered?
I mean, it's not going to be Duvernay. Duvernay has 8 targets on the season. 3 touchdowns? I know he's got he's got 3 touchdowns, but the dude has 8 targets. Like, I'm not going to be chasing that. Bateman is really frustrating because every time Bateman has touched the ball this year, he looks like he's like on another plane of existence. But, like, he's not playing a lot, which is really – I don't really get. I mean, he's run a route on just 75% of the Baltimore dropbacks. That's 60th among all wide receivers in the NFL. But he's got, like, this just a huge play every game. I would love to start seeing him play, like, full-time, get that route rate up to, like, 90% and start getting, you know, pushing a lot more targets. Even last week, just 4 targets, and, you know, he had one with a 35-yarder. But, yeah, I mean, his upside is electric. But we would love to see the usage get going here for him, for sure.
I mean, Andrews can be such a cheat code if he just – I mean, he can outlap all the tight ends by 10, 15 points. Like, theoretically, that's possible. And just, you know, spending up, obviously, it really hampers the rest of your lineup to some degree. But, you know, when he hits, if he hits, and he's been hitting, and all the other tight ends just kind of like get their 4 for 40 and maybe they get the end zone or something like that, it's a beautiful thing to be overweight on guys like that. Yeah, your thought here, John, as far as the peripheral pieces for Lamar, who's your favorite pairing piece?
Yeah, it's always good when you can leverage Andrews. If there's a higher price tight end, people are valuing ahead of him. That was the case last week with Kelce and what we thought was a great matchup. I particularly thought Kelce was the play over Andrews. Was not the case. I don't know if I need to look here at that this week, but Andrews is obviously an amazing play. Like, we asked what happened when Marquise Brown leaves this offense, and the answer is, oh, Andrews is going to lead the team in 20-yard targets. And Lamar Jackson hasn't even been accurate on those deep shots. He's still bottom 4 in the league and on target rate on throws 20-plus yards downfield, but Andrews is still living off leading the team in targets both in the deep range and intermediate level of the field, 10 to 19 yards within the line of scrimmage. On the other side of the ball, it's interesting because I keep wondering who is the person to pair up to make unique Josh Allen double stacks. And I thought the answer maybe for touchdown equity was Dawson Knox last week. And he did suffer the cramping. But man, we're seeing and it could be due to game script, but we're seeing different usage for Dawson Knox this year. Not only in target share, but remember the last 10 games when he returned from that broken wrist last year, he was on the field for a route on 90% of Josh Allen's dropbacks. This year, he's been on the field for just 62% of Buffalo's dropbacks overall, including last week. Again, around cramping, but just 59%. So overall, like, it just seems to be picking the right second receiver behind Stephon Diggs, who also has not hit his ceiling yet since he was supposed to play the full game, but didn't since he suffered an in-game injury last week.
I think like the quote unquote obvious one is probably Gabe Davis, proud of UCF. You could, like, if you want to be a little goofy, maybe, I mean, Devin Singletary, if he's going to get 10 passes thrown his way. I think that's one thing you can pair Allen with Singletary. It's not nuts. What are your thoughts here? You go ahead.
Not to cut Rich off, but they hammered McKenzie on their first two drives last week. And that kind of shocked me since they hadn't been using him previously. It took Jake Kumerow getting injured in the first quarter, but McKenzie's usage may stand out here actually as the second person to tack on to Stephon Diggs.
What was the usage for Davis? Was he kind of eased in coming back from that injury? Do you happen to have it in front of you as far as snap count?
He led the team in routes run, but I don't think they wanted him to. Like, I think because they had four dead bodies, like they had to, and also feed James Cook like targets as well.
Davis played football at UCF. He knows about the humidity. He can take it. He can withstand it. These other guys, they don't know what it's like. Rich, Buffalo?
You know more about UCF football than you do Thanos. I'm proud of you, dude.
Well, I mean, I think you go back to the first half of that game, and Miami was just blitzing so much and not getting home, and they completely recalibrated in the second half. I think that's why McKenzie had such a huge first half, though, and like why he was getting peppered. I mean, Miami was blitzing almost 40% of the dropbacks, but they weren't getting any type of pressure at all, and they just said, screw this, let's drop back in cover two, and they played cover two at their highest rate of the season in the second half of that game. So, I mean, it depends on what Baltimore is going to do. Are they going to try to bring pressure? Because if they are, then that's going to open the door for McKenzie, right? He's going to be that one-on-one kind of beat man coverage and get those hot looks type of targets. If they're going to sit back and play zone, then, you know, obviously you're going to get the Diggs, Gabe Davis show. Yeah, I mean, Gabe Davis, we know what Gabe Davis is, right? Like, there's no secret, like, with Gabe Davis. People want to keep fighting on Twitter about it all the time. Like, the dude is, like, a touchdown scorer. And, like, when he doesn't score touchdowns, he's not going to get a lot of yards and catches. Like, he's a big play magnet. Like, the types of targets he gets matter. He doesn't necessarily draw a lot of targets. The types of targets he gets are hyper productive for fantasy football. And he dropped a touchdown last week. He had another one. You know, he had another one in his bag. The dude's their best run blocker. He's going to be on the field basically the whole game. That's why we like him. He's attached to Josh Allen. Devin Singletary, I mean, his usage, I mean, one, the raw target count, you got to ignore because they had 63 dropbacks.
Yeah.
Like, so the raw target count doesn't mean anything. And then also what we've seen is that he became kind of like the guy that they trusted in there as like that pass protector. He pass blocked on a 16 snaps season high because of all those blitzes Miami is sending. They're like, we got to bring in someone we trust. So that's how, as a byproduct, he just got on the field so much. I don't think we'll see that again. I don't think we're going to see, like, you know, Devin Singletary run back the 11 targets and the high target share this week. So, I mean, I would be focused back on those wide receivers because of what we talked about. You know, the Ravens aren't getting a lot of pass rush and the back end isn't holding up. Give me Diggs, give me Davis, mix in some McKenzie if we think they're going to be aggressive. But, yeah, I like the Bills side here.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? you need Indeed.
Give me the final score in this game, Rich. Give me a bold prediction here.
I bet it lets down. These types of games always do, man. Yeah. Like, this is the game everyone's going to circle. It'll probably, maybe in like the 40s, you know, something like that. But this is, like I said, the one wild card is like what Lamar is doing. But I don't think the Bills are going to play him like teams have played him so far. And, I'd be disappointed. And we've seen that so far with the Bills, like they just have a lot shorter passing game. Like Ken Dorsey's not quite as aggressive as Daboll. I'm getting small sample, but they're focused on more of a shorter passing game than they were last year. So
it's only Wednesday night, but we're also expecting 36 mile per hour winds right now in this game. Okay. So only Wednesday, these things change, but just be wary of the weather in this game as well.
Man, Buffalo just cannot dodge funky weather. Either it's too humid or it's too windy. That's unfortunate. That would really, I want to see what Chief Meteorologist Kevin Roth has to say about that on Sunday, because 36, I think, I don't care about 15. I don't care about 20. But 36, you know, again, it's Sunday night.
Be dealing with weather Twitter in week 4 already.
Yeah.
I'm not ready. I'm just not mentally prepared. Like, get me to at least November.
Yeah. I don't want to mess with this either. But if it's not this game, Rich, what's the game that goes nuts? This is the highest total on the board. Cleveland, Atlanta is number 2 at 49.5. Seattle, Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, you probably see Seattle, Detroit will be focused on, like Daniel said, we need to focus on injury reports in there. I mean, I could see Cleveland, Atlanta still getting there for sure. Those all look good. Oh, Denver Raiders too, for sure, because everyone's leaving. We're gonna talk about that whole game and like the matchup play stuff. But like, that's another one that I think has upside too. So we'll see. I mean, obviously this game's gonna be really popular, but typically these games, we hone in on this like a game with like this type of ownership, like. It really gets there.
The theme of the last 2 weeks too has really just been to go off the board on the total that goes like completely bonkers, the total that goes over on games that we haven't really talked about either. So just something to keep in mind. And if you ask me like which game stands out as that theme, it probably is Raiders Broncos.
Well, as someone that plays a lot of small field and just like the game on top, like it's hard to do that at this game. Like everyone's really expensive.
I'm taking a peek at our chat over here on YouTube. I appreciate y'all tuning in live. Kindly hit that like button. Do subscribe. Turn on those notifications. And Josh is saying, I'm off on Russ because of the Subway TikTok. And like, there's many reasons.
I mean, listen, his whole career is built on cringe. It wasn't those the bread. How come he didn't get his product of the bread footballs in at Subway for the sandwiches?
It was a wrap, right? Is that what that was?
Oh, it was a wrap. But he has that bread maker that makes those bread footballs. How can we couldn't marry the two?
I don't know. But my question is, he leaning in? Like, he know? Is he kind of winking? He knows it's cringy?
No,
it's Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think he thinks he's cool.
I think he's leaning in. I think he's just
got paid $250 million. So who are we to say what is cool and what's not?
Yeah,
that's Russell. I mean, it's who he's been the entire time.
I feel like it's a bit now. He's having fun with it. Like he's high-fiving nobody.
No.
Well, I don't know.
He thinks he's awesome. He thinks he's Peter Overzet.
He's Mr. Unlimited. What are you talking about? All right. We're going to run it back and talk about our favorite plays position by position. Before we do that, I do want to mention our fabulous sponsor, Thrive. Join in on the fantasy prop action this NFL season with Thrive Fantasy. Easy to play. No salary cap. You just play the plays you want. Bet the overs. Bet the unders. Do not mess with the salary cap. It's no salary cap as far as the style. It revolves around over-under style player props. Each player prop has a fantasy score associated with the prop. The riskier the prop happens to be, the more fantasy points you get for winning that prop. You rack up the most points for your share of the prize pool. Of course, we have a nice, sweet, fat promo code. It's Grinders, Grinders. That's Grinders, Grinders. When you sign up, you get a deposit bonus up to $250, as well as free tickets. How do those tickets work? You get two free $20 contest tickets if you deposit between $100 and $499 American dollars. If you deposit $500+, you get 6 free $20 contest tickets, so $120 free in tickets if you deposit $500. And also, again, a $250 deposit match bonus. We do have some of the I threw them your way, guys. I don't know if you're taking a peek as far as their big tournament over there at Thrive today. Thrive this week. You got to pick 10 of these 20 right? And again, some of them are kind of a coin toss, like CeeDee Lamb, over or under 60 and a half yards. If you predict over, you get 100 points. You predict under, you get 100 points. That one's kind of a break even. Josh Allen, over 2.5 passing touchdowns, you get 130 points. If you're bold, you get those 3 touchdowns, you get 130. If you're not so bold, it gets under, you only get 70 points. So really not much of a payoff there.
Is it bold for this game, like under
those?
It's like
40-mile-an-hour wins, it is.
Right. I'm upset. Thrive doesn't know the wind. Thrive's not Kevin the Rock.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I was looking at this before the show, and I'm like, yeah, I'm definitely going to play over on Josh Allen, getting 3 touchdowns, and I'm getting juice, theoretically, like 130 points on it. I feel like that's a good, it's a great play. But I hate to be a prisoner to the weather. Kyle Pitts, here you go. Is this bold or not? Over, under a touchdown. If he gets a touchdown, you get 125 points. You say no touchdown, just 75. And there's not a lot of benefit in betting the under on that because the 75 points are nice. They're better than zero. But in these big tournaments, you really have to kind of sort of sweep the board. Is there anybody standing out for you, John?
I'll go bold because that's what you want. You always mention going bold on this segment. So yeah. I'll go bold and scroll down just a hair, and I will go under Nick Chubb touchdowns, hoping and thinking all the touchdowns are soaked up through the air by the two players we talked about, David Njoku and Amari Cooper. I'm worried. Nick Chubb has faced, or the Browns have faced, the league's highest rate of 8-man boxes, and Chubb is still averaging 5.5 yards per carry and leading the league in rushing yards. Nothing has stopped him. But at the same time, it's a good enough matchup for Cleveland's passing game that maybe it's those other two receivers who soak everything up. So I'll go under for the points.
What about yourself, Rich? Don't give me like Leonard Fournette under 1.5 touchdowns for 50.
Rich always takes the injury outs.
You know what? I can't believe we didn't even bring up the Nick Chubb narrative streak playing in his first game from Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even go narrative.
I didn't think about that.
I like a couple of these on there. Like, obviously, I look 4 down. I think it's another really good spot for Tyler Lockett, a guy I played last week in my Atlanta run backs. He's playing 40. He's running 42% of his routes from the slot. DK Metcalf's running 85% of his routes out wide. Detroit's allowed 11 catches for 143 yards and 2 touchdowns to opposing slot receivers. I think he's the inherent run back for Seattle, even though DK scored last week and people are excited he got some targets. I think Lockett, actually, the role he's in this offense has been really kind of a better marriage for the structure of their offense they're running now this year with Geno. Matchup's good. You know, I won't get into any Jeffrey Okuda stuff, but I think the matchup's better for Lockett, so I could see him getting a bunch more receptions again. I like the Chubb under just for the purposes of it's a touchdown. Like, you see the guy not score touchdowns, sometimes those are hypervariant, right? Like, I like that. I love Deontay Johnson over 62.5 receiving yards against the Jets. Deontay Johnson, the only receiver in the NFL with over 30% of team targets the first 3 games. The Jets have been getting absolutely smoked by wide receivers. I like that one too. So there's a couple of them there that just aren't like me taking the token cheap way out with injuries here this week.
I appreciate that. Yeah, $125,000 contest, 25K to first. They have lots of stuff going on over at Thrive, but that's their big boy tournament. And then last I saw the last several weeks from the start of the season, it's been overlaying. So feel free to jump in there again one last time. The promo code is Grinders. Use the promo code Grinders when you sign up for a deposit bonus up to $250, as well as those free tickets we talked about. Let's talk about quarterbacks, Rich. Man, Geno Smith, like, he's really cheap, and he's in Detroit, and every quarterback against Detroit is well-positioned. Do you have a take on this? I don't know. I want to cover the name up, and then maybe I'll play him. talk to me about Geno and the other quarterbacks that you like this week.
Geno still for fantasy, like, there's like, I don't know what kind of, you know, ceiling you get, you know, especially when we talk about all the ceilings like these quarterbacks are providing, right? I mean, he's throwing the ball 20 yards or further, just at the 25th highest rate in the NFL. He's also running a little bit of hot. He's 12% completion rate over expectation, which is the highest rate in the NFL. So I think still he's more of a floor play. I mean, they have allowed a top 10 score of the Lions, that is, in every game this season, but they also have faced Jalen Hurts, you know, Kirk Cousins, and then, yeah, Carson Wentz got him in the second half. But, yeah, I don't know if he's so much of a silly play. I mean, to me, if Amon-Ra is going to be healthy and if Josh Reynolds or Melody Goff is the inherent play, because, one, it's leverage on Jamal Williams. Two, yeah, they have a 28-point team total, which is, you know, the highest on the slate. The Lions have the highest team total on the slate. I can't believe we're here.
Hell yeah.
So, I mean, to me, Goff would be the dude I think is way more appealing in this game. You just need to see that these wide receivers are going to be healthy. Because Seattle, their defense is just horrible. I mean, they just don't have the personnel defensively. And we've just seen them all three games just kind of get roasted here through the pass. And they're just giving up chunk plays in the passing game and in the run game, too. I mean, you can play whoever you want, really, against Seattle, but I like the Lions. So I like the Goff side because of the Jamal Williams angle too.
The Falcons averaged 7.5 yards per play against the Seahawks last week. Like, that tells you everything you need to know.
I mean, look at the Broncos. The Broncos, you go back, they didn't score any they didn't catch any opportunities, but yeah. That was by the Broncos, Russ threw for 350 yards, had 10 yards per pass. They were doing whatever they wanted still too, except for putting the ball in the end zone. And the 49ers basically just tried to get the hell out of there after they got that huge lead. But everyone's just doing whatever they want on that defense.
Chat, Adam's talking about DJ Dallas for cheap now that Homer's on the IL. But still, he's the third running back. He's behind Penny and Walker, and it's kind of a third. I can't imagine playing DJ Dallas unless it's a crazy, huge GPP tournament. Yeah. We're not playing DJ Dallas, are we, guys?
No, I like Penny. I think Penny's a good play on both sides. You'd like him inherently more on FanDuel than DK, but he's only 4.9 on DK. Last week, he played 70% of the snaps, 15 snaps for DJ Dallas, just 9 for Kenneth Walker. Now, they could just flip this whenever they want. So, I mean, I don't know how much we want to latch onto it, but at that price in a tournament, I think he's really interesting because we know that he has big play upside. I mean, Detroit was a team we targeted all last year, and this year they've come out and allowed 6 touchdowns to running backs to open the season. They've allowed 22 rushing points per game. That's 31st in the NFL. Obviously, we all remember when these two teams played week 17 last year, Penny had 190 yards and 2 touchdowns. I think Penny's pretty interesting at his price. Obviously, tournament game stack only play, but 4.9 is pretty cheap for a lot of upside.
John, I want to get your quarterbacks. And again, I really want an official take as far as Russ Wilson, because there's a lot of recency bias for people. They watch that game on national TV and it's no. But if there is a get right spot, it's in that dome and against the Raiders, theoretically, they're about 3-point dogs there. Man, he's not moving. He's not running anymore, which is kind of disappointing.
It's really just comes down to their how inaccurate and efficient they've been in the red zone, because they're still 13th in yards per drive, but 31st in points per drive. So the touchdowns clearly haven't been there. And more importantly, now you get this team who has the third lowest red zone scoring rate. Russell Wilson's 8-for-18 in the red zone, hasn't thrown a touchdown, but the Raiders have allowed the third highest red zone scoring percentage this year on over 80% of their red zone possessions against them. And so we think there's a little bit of bounce back here. And more importantly for Russ, no one's going to play him. And also, there's really only one way for him to go with the ball, because Sutton has 21 targets and 47% of the team's air yards the past 2 weeks. The next closest on the team only has 9 targets. So it doesn't just have to be a Sutton standalone option you're looking at. Again, no one's going to play Russ in a terrific matchup. This is the game where if Russ goes nuts, this is it right here, this matchup.
And Albert O is kind of worthless now. He's not even the top tight end on his team. I saw people on Twitter talking about dropping Judy in season long. That's your wheelhouse, John. Is that what people should be doing or no?
No. But some people understand context as well. Dude, the leagues out there you hear about where Chris Olave is still a free agent. Okay. And it gets wild. Don't get into the waiver wire depths. It gets wild out there.
Dude, Judy got hurt 10 snaps into week 2. So yeah. We're going to throw and then last week his route partition rate was just under 70%. So he didn't practice the entire week. He also almost had a huge touchdown. Mm-hmm. Week 1, he had a touchdown. There's only 2 guys in this offense.
Yeah.
You think they're going to start throwing? Who else are they going to start throwing the ball to? The Broncos schedule is so easy. No, I would. I mean, come on, man. We're hanging on. I think he's a good play here. I think you could double stack Russ because of the reason I just said. If you want to get off of it, I think Javonte Williams is a pretty fun tournament play. Russ is number one, even as bad as he's been, he's number one in yards per pass attempt against man coverage. The Raiders play zone coverage at the 27th highest rate in the NFL. They'll still give you those looks under Patrick Graham. It's not Gus Bradley anymore. Man, yeah, I think Russ is a pretty solid play. Now, he could just be washed, right? The thing about this, what we've seen so far with the Broncos is
this has ended up just looking like what we saw the last few years of every Russell Wilson offense, where every third down is a struggle. In rhythm plays, like these, you know, the quick pass game is just non-existent. Every play is a shot play where it's a 50-50 ball to like a boundary wide receiver. That's like what we've seen so far. It's looked like every Russell Wilson offense the last 3 years. He still has just like, he still has an absolute cannon. He can rip it, but you know, the quick game has just been absolutely awful right now.
Hey, one more thought. Kyler Murray, why is he not running anymore? Is it small sample stuff or is there something changing here? Anybody got a thought on that? Just throwing it out to the field.
No thoughts on why he's not running. They've ranked first in no huddle rate in back-to-back weeks now. They're running more plays, probably because they suck and need to run more plays. But, like, they are actually improving their pace on offense. It's just, like, the issue is their offense doesn't change. Like, it is Zach Ertz getting volume that's not explosive, Marquise Brown having to hang his head on a lot of targets, but downfield targets, and Greg Dortch being the most efficient receiver on the team. Nothing else matters. Like, that's the issue here.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to running back. Jamal Williams is going to, you know, be really, really popular, especially on DK, the presumed absence of Swift. Same deal with Khalil Herbert, the presumed absence of Montgomery. We did mention earlier in the show, Wednesday night, CMC did not practice Wednesday. Jonathan Taylor did not practice. I mean, I wouldn't freak out just yet. Wednesday is kind of a rest day for a lot of guys. They don't practice on Friday. Then you got to be on red alert. You got anything that, John, as far as CMC and Taylor, you kind of mentioned, is there a real chance these guys sit?
We're waiting on it, but usually when coaches are ominous, that's not a good sign. I don't think it's a good sign for Christian McCaffrey this week. The problem is that Baker Mayfield being under center also isn't a good sign for the Panthers this week, even though it is a good matchup against the Cardinals. Rich tweeted, by the way, a person on the show tweeted this week that the Panthers are averaging the fewest touches per game among their skill players. So, like, we also have to question in a tandem backfield, because Christian McCaffrey really isn't getting there on the usage either, given how this offense fares in a quick hitting underneath passing scheme under Ben McAdoo. So now you have to question if Christian McCaffrey on 28 touches, I believe it was this past game, isn't getting there. Can Chuba Hubbard and Deontay Foreman in a split backfield with the same touches get there? And the answer is probably no. So even at stone men, like, it's probably not worth it, honestly. But I really question, like, I don't think we have McCaffrey this week.
Yeah, I'm thinking if Baker can kill CMC kind of sort of somewhat, you can't feel great about Chuba and Foreman. They're pretty cheap for what it's worth. Foreman is the dirt low, 4K on DK, Hubbard 4.7, but hard to get enthused about any of that. You feel good about Jamal Williams? Is that good chalk? Is Herbert good chalk, John?
I love Jamal Williams, but again, Rich had the tournament play, pivoting off on Jared Goff. Given the matchup, as long as we get a Monroe St. Brown, that also is simultaneously a pivot off of TJ Hawkinson, who, given his salary, I think people will play, and I never want to play, so this is great. Just give me another reason to not play him at all. And Jamal Williams is good. The thing is, we've seen this one, it's only one game under the same coaching staff, but we saw this same exact scenario last year in week 16, whenever Jamal Williams led the team with 19 touches, but Craig Reynolds, who was in for DeAndre Swift, got 14 touches and 100% of the team's backfield targets, all four targets. We know from experience from just these last three games, Jamal Williams still going to get those money touches inside the 10-yard line over whomever else is available behind him. But, you know, if you want to pivot off of the cheap quarterback, because that's what we're really trying to do here, off of Geno Smith onto Jared Goff and spend up elsewhere with the receivers we know we're going to in Amon-Ra St. Brown and Josh Reynolds, perhaps. That's still the tournament pivot you want.
Lots of names thrown out there, Rich. Feel free to gravitate onto any of those or bring some new ones into the conversation. Eckler and, man, the Chargers, like, everybody's hurt. They lost another lineman. They can't run the ball as is. I was so much more bullish on that team this season, but they just – if jinx is more real, it just feels like the Chargers are jinxed, man. Who do you want to bring into the conversation as far as running backs? And feel free to tack on some of the guys that were thrown out there already.
Yeah, I want to get there in Eckler, but damn, he's so expensive still. You know, they arguably have the worst run game in the NFL, and now we're talking about potentially missing two starting offensive linemen. Well, we know Slater's out. We don't know if Lindsley is going to come back. Austin Eckler has 32 carries for 80 yards rushing. But his rushing totals are 36, 39, and 5
in the three games. Now he's facing Houston, though. If you can't get going here, you can't get it going at anyone, right? Like, you know, they're 29th in yards per carry, a lot of their running backs. They've allowed a first down or touchdown on 28% of carries. That's 24th. They've allowed five or more rushing yards on 46% of the carries against, and that's 29th. So, like, we're going to – if Eckler can't get running here, like, I don't know if it's going to happen. But he's another guy. I brought up Penny. I brought up Saquon. Khalil Herbert we talked about. I mean, you could just keep paying for Saquon if, you know, you want to keep playing Saquon. If we reshuffled up, like, redrafts, I think Saquon would be 102, right? I think we'd see Kupp be unanimous 101. I think Saquon would be 102, knowing what we know now.
Wow.
But, yeah, all those guys are –
Not to get into this spiel, but it'd be close with Taylor. Taylor's third down usage is still pretty great, honestly. The team may suck, but his third down usage is good.
Where's Jefferson in that? Is he top five?
Yeah, he'd still be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Listen, man, I understand the last 2 weeks have been frustrating, especially because we tasted in week one. That's the frustrating part. We had the sample of week one. Like, this is how it's supposed to go. But I'm not worried about Justin.
Life is about expectations. When you get that expectation right out of the gate, it's like, oh, wait a second. I was promised this. And yeah.
Yeah, we started off on euphoria, man. Like,
you got anybody off the wall, off the board as far as running backs, Rich, that's worth
exploring? I mean, I thought Penny was as good as I could do, man.
That's pretty good, yeah. That's why I didn't have any quarterback picks either, because, like, I mean, we kind of talked about all the quarterbacks that are going to be in my pool this week.
You know what's weird standing out here as far as, again, I'm looking at Cardi's blitz game level factors, as far as the game is projected to have the most plays, and there's some question marks in it as well, but the Jets and Pittsburgh, it has the most plays projected at 138.4, and it also has one of the lowest totals on the board, right?
Harris. Well, one thing with the Jets, though, is you have to factor in now. It's like anything that happened, like, is that what their offense is going to be, right?
Wilson, yeah.
Like, you know, Zach Wilson's coming back. They basically were just awful and had to throw it 60 times a game at, like, 4 yards down the field to Tyler Conklin and Breece Hall. Like, there's a lot of volatility into, like, what we have now moving forward with them. Because no team was ever going to throw the ball 800 times. I think it's, like, what they're pacing for. You know, and like Daniel said, like, when typically you have a bad play, it means you have to run more plays. And that's what we had with the Jets so far. But Zach
and
Wilson
I bet
just bad, but do they trust him to throw that many passes?
I bet Elijah Moore gets over 10%. Like, I bet people still want to play Elijah Moore from Zach Wilson.
Elijah Moore is 4.8 on DK for what it's worth, 5.5 on FanDuel.
I'm going to guess he gets steam more than that.
Oh, no, that wasn't an ownership. That was his actual price. I'm sorry. Yeah. As far as ownership, I don't think it's very high right now for what it's worth. But
I'm going to guess it's 10 to 15% by Sunday. I'm going to guess.
I don't know what people are going to do with that game. I don't know what to do with that game. And like Rich says, like, the Jets stuff, who really knows? And it's some outlier games and a brand new quarterback. Is it official that Zach Wilson's going to be the quarterback? Is it officially announced or just assumed?
Yes.
He was cleared.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's Robert Slaw said originally, like, once he's cleared, he's going to play. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just combining those two. But, yeah, I don't think they've come out and just said it. Deontay Johnson at 6K, I think, is legit, like, a really good play, though, in that game.
Yeah, I don't mind that. And Harris just –
we are in a day and age, Dean, where no one is official. Like, every player is day-to-day on the injury report. No one's actually starting until they're starting. It's ridiculous.
Well, in this day, too, like, the day and age of Twitter, like, today's, like, Wednesday, right? Like, we've historically known, like, Wednesday, like, guys will miss for, like, weird things or, let's, like, not practice, right? Especially running backs that touch the football a lot of times. So, like, everyone's freaking out, but, like, you got to let some of this stuff breathe in the middle of the week. And also just a new day in the NFL, because we saw how everyone handled the preseason. Like, they're not going to run guys out. Like, the sports science side of, like, the equation now for all these teams, mm-hmm. like, they're not working these guys in practice as much either, so... I don't know. Give me to Friday and tell me that Christian McCaffrey's not practicing on Friday or Jonathan Taylor's not practicing Friday, and I'll start to, like, really bubble up here.
Yeah, I don't want to fully dig on that stuff. I'm just speculating. And again, this is like a first look kind of sort of show to some degree. You're going to, you know, stay tuned. You're going to be watching mm-hmm. some more stuff going forward. And I feel like Wilson a downgrade? Is it fair to say Wilson's a downgrade from Flacco as far as the overall offense and the efficiency? Or is that, I don't know. I'm just in my head, it feels
like efficiency... Flacco is bad.
Yeah.
It's hard to be worse.
Efficiency wasn't there.
Zach Wilson as a rookie, like Zach Wilson, what he was last year as transitive property, probably not. But like, what is there any growth here? Is there opportunity for growth? We've seen like Trevor Lawrence take a step forward. If there's a chance for Zach Wilson to be, at least you have to play him. Like you have to see.
Yeah,
they took him second overall last year. Like you got to play him.
Nature of the
they're missing three offensive linemen too. They're down three starting offensive linemen. It's a bad run out for the Jets again. Typically,
it's a 12 game slate and 9 games at 1, 3 games in the late slate.
So
and
stupid.
The 3 late games are kind of rough. Like Arizona, Carolina, 42.5. That Denver Raiders game, which could get funky. I think that's the one that's most likely to get funky. 45.5, and then New England and Green Bay, which
Hoyer.
The Brian Hoyer show. And Rodgers is kind of a game manager quarter. I mean, he's good at what he does. He's, but
I mean, it's their offense. He doesn't have a choice. Like that's what they're running. Like they have bottom three pace and neutral game script. I think they have the fourth lowest wide receiver target rate right now. Like this is what their offense is. We kind of knew that this year. They're relying strictly on efficiency, which you can do with Rodgers, but you have to be efficient every week because nothing is arriving to help you in volume on this team.
Yeah, and DFS-wise, it's just kind of worthless.
People will run Dubs back. I mean, for sure.
Yeah, Dubs. Yeah.
You'll see Dubs get run back for sure. I think Tonyan's pretty interesting in that game too. But, we see this all the time in these tight end slates. It's Andrews in the field. More people will play the field because you only need one guy to play bad, right? And then it's wide open. But
My first thought is I want to play Dubs. Like, I'm going to play him a la carte, right? And that we kind of saw his breakout game last week. And there's no reason to think like he wouldn't excel as the number one guy for other, by default, draft equity, however you want to say it. But what do they have to do against New England? But you might be able to get a couple cheap touchdowns out of them, some turnovers or something like that. But it's Jones and Dylan, and they're going to kind of eat at each other. So neither looks spectacular. But of course, in tournaments, yada, yada. Receivers, John, the board is yours. There are some receivers that are worth talking about.
Brian Hoyer, by the way, has lost his last 14 starts. Like, I cannot believe they're running him out there. I'm not even a big, Bailey Zappi guy, but, what you have in Brian Hoyer. He's been holding a clipboard for 7 years now. I can't believe it.
I've never heard of what's the guy's name? Zappi? What's his name?
Bailey Zappi.
Bailey Zappi. I've never heard of him. I'm a big Bailey Zappi guy.
Kentucky, right?
Yeah, he was a one-read quarterback and a shotgun offense, essentially, just a college scheme. Yeah. But, he has more upside just in existing over Brian Hoyer or whatever. Michael Pittman is interesting. The Titans are the only defense allowing double-digit yards per target to opposing wideouts, and Pittman has a 25% target share in the 2 games he played. Even in Ashton Doolin registering 35% target per route run rate, we saw them move him back to the bench as their fifth wide receiver with everyone else. Pittman and Alec Pierce healthy last week. So Pittman very clearly the target here. Rich already mentioned Tyler Lockett, who I really like this week. Metcalf has the team's only red zone and end zone targets the past 2 games, but Tyler Lockett still has a 30.8% target share to Metcalf's 23.6. Something's bound to give here, given the volume. And then we already mentioned Russ and Cortland Sutton. I like bringing back Davante Adams, and I know it's easy to say that. He's expensive. I don't know how many people will get there, but, he still leads the team in red zone targets, and despite Mac Hollins' breakout the past 2 games, has only one fewer target than Hollins. Like, he's right there every single week. I'm not worried about it, so I don't know, how many people are actually going to play Adams this week, and I love the skinny stack option in a late swap position.
I've been Wikipediaing Bailey Zappi. Shout out to Hilltoppers. Western Kentucky. I've never heard of that. I don't really follow the draft. I'm not a big draft or college guy outside of UCF, of course. But, fourth rounder. I guess he would get it. He's just not ready, obviously. But Brian Hoyer, it's going to be a disaster. That's not going to go well.
If we know anything about the Patriots this year, is that Belichick just knew he wanted friends around him. That's it. Just bring all your friends back between Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, Brian Hoyer, everyone comes back.
I mean, I want my friends to be around me for my death too. So I want to be surrounded by loved ones.
Rich, what do you got as far as some receivers you want to enter into the conversation?
Yeah, we talked about a lot of them. I like Pittman too. I like that call. I like Lockett. I like Deontay. A lot of the guys we talked about during the games. Listen, Sadarian's going to get that Monday Night Football pricing.
You know, they're always, you know, pricing comes out before. I mean, what if like CeeDee Lamb actually is just the player we all thought we were drafting in the summer? It kind of looks like that, right? Like week one looked like we had a terrible run out, but the dude has 29%, 53%, and 53% of the team air yards through three games. He has 27%, 37%, and 40% of the team targets through three games. Like, that's what we kind of were drafting him for. Cooper Rush, competent. Competent.
Yeah.
Getting him the football. he plays against the Washington football team, who are a sieve.
Not competent.
Defensively. Not competent. Yeah. Not competent. There's no commanding going on over there. Get paid? No.
We've seen it before, like Scott Mitchell or something. Like, I mean, this is not the first time where like somebody goes out there for three or four games and does, like you said, looks competent. I'm not saying that I would want my favorite team to pay Cooper Rush, but okay.
He's set for life because when you do this under Jerry Jones, you get invited to every dinner party. So, like, don't worry about Cooper Rush. And remember, like, Cooper Rush, they literally cut in the preseason, like, heading into week one. And no one even tried to pick him up because it's Cooper Rush. Who cares at all? And now he's, like, the most competent backup in the entire NFL.
Was that a salary cap thing? I feel like it was a salary cap thing, right?
They had to rejigger their entire contract situation around Zeke, but also like to fit Dak's cap hit in. This is what the Cowboys do every year. They literally just restructure everyone and just finagle with the cap.
But nobody thought he could be like the third string quarterback.
No one. He was available for everyone on waivers. No one put in a bid whatsoever. No one cared at all because it's Cooper Rush. He was terrible. And now, again, for some reason, he's the most competent backup in the NFL.
And it's a great name, too. Like, if I was writing a script about, like, a football, you know, player, my lead character's name is Cooper Rush, right? I think. It's a pretty good name.
Sean Payton can be the janitor at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Did you watch the Sean Payton movie starring Kevin James?
I may have had a few drinks one night.
Do you think Sean Payton was they let him know, like, hey, just so you know, it's gonna be Kevin James. Like, was he excited when he found out it was Kevin James?
He was wearing a toupee. Like, it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. That alone is worth taking on the role.
I feel like I gotta see that. It's gotta be terrible.
You do.
I know. Yeah. I haven't seen the Kurt Warner movie yet either.
Oh, I haven't seen that either, but I imagine that's bad. But I think it actually was pretty well received by the critics and audiences.
I mean, Zachary Levi throwing that football in the previews, though, was. I should watch it just for the sake of that, just seeing that.
It looked like a made-for-TV movie, like when I saw the trailer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the production.
From Lifetime or something? Where is this being played? National Championship was pretty good. Like a movie that nobody saw. Like, it's kind of ahead of its time, and it's sort of like, I don't think it impacted what went on with the NCAA. Do you know about this movie starring, what's the dude's name? Character actor. The guy's like the dad in every movie. He's in the drumming movie where he's very upset. He's a very strict teacher. What? J.K. Simmons. You know J.K. Simmons?
Yeah.
You've seen him in everything.
Are you talking about Whiplash?
No, yeah, well, yeah, I was trying to describe Whiplash. No. They couldn't get it in my brain for some reason.
I love Whiplash. I've seen it multiple times.
Excellent movie. Yeah,
excellent movie, yes.
But National Champions, it's a movie about college football. There's no football in it at all, but it's about like the politics of college football and like the players getting paid and that kind of stuff. It's pretty good. It's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. And I feel like it like just sort of came and went. Just came out, but nobody acknowledged it. Tight ends. John, what do you got as far as tight ends this week?
I mean, honestly, we've already talked about the guys I'm going to play too, just because David Njoku's sitting there at 3,700 in a terrific matchup for me to stack against him. And so that's kind of where I'm going to stick. I would imagine the Roto Grinders models are probably popping TJ Hawkinson. Is that correct?
Like 70%. Yeah. And by the way, I just got your tweet. You're
no way.
You're tweeting. What is going on in that picture? I have a lot of questions.
They told Sean Payton, we'll give you 10K to wear a toupee. He said, hell yes, of course. In my own movie, we'll do that.
I had no idea. It's just a little cameo in the movie, I assume, right?
Yeah, it's just a cameo at the end. And he's not Sean Payton. He's the janitor. It's great.
Okay, I didn't get the reference. But yeah, Hawkinson right now is looking like the chalk, cash game, DK. You know,
he
tight
scored
end.
A touchdown on a single-digit target rate, his season-low 9.5% target share, ran a route on a season-low 69% of dropbacks, and yet is still popping for being cheap when, like, he and Amon-Ra St. Brown have the same ADOT. Like, there's a reason why Hawkins is not seeing targets because Amon-Ra St. Brown cannibalizes that territory. Now, if St. Brown's out, you can make the argument for Hawkinson. I still don't think I'll get there personally, but yeah, I'm not playing Hawkinson. That's crazy.
Second guy, by the way, it's 57% for Hawkinson, 11% for Noah Fant. Just to
really?
He's just the Iowa. It's the Iowa party, baby. And they're playing against each other and heads up against each other.
He's 3.1K and just like
you can enjoy all the Will Disley touchdowns.
Man, week four is wild.
Nobody wants Noah Fant. I understand. Yeah, I'm sure this is not. It's just a salary thing. And then Njoku is the third guy.
I mean, they use three tight ends. Noah Fant is an analogy for Seahawks tight ends, but you can't play them as a combined group. You get one of them.
You should be able to get team tight end.
I mean, we should just kill it with fire.
You got anything, Rich, as far as tight? Just get Andrews. You got to be overrating Andrews this week is my first thought.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I feel like as a cheapie, we talked about Njoku in the game. We talked about, like I said, I brought up Tonyan a little bit. He's starting to get – he's getting ramped up. He's getting more snaps, more routes run per game. He's getting targeted a ton when he's on the field. Yeah. They're not for any yards or anything, but like I said, he's what, three? I think he's like 3K.
3.7
on 3.5.
DK, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is another one of those guys down there in DK where you just hope magically catches a pass in the end zone. But, yeah, I like the idea of just saying, well, if the field is going to say they want to just fade Mark Andrews, then I'll be cool to play him. Yeah, but that's it, man. I mean, these guys all suck. I hate tight end. It's terrible again. Like we talked about at the beginning of the show. Dude, if Tyler Conklin's a tight end three, I know everything I know about the tight end. There's two good ones. There's two good ones.
If you tell me I get seven targets, no more, no less, with Tanya, and I'll take my chances of that. Like, and you're saying they're ramping them up a bit too. I don't have the, you know, the routes and, you know, things like that up in front of me. But yeah, he had seven last time out. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, but sure. You give me seven targets, I'll take my chances. And there's not a lot of receiving options on that Green Bay side. Of course, they like to run the ball a good bit too. And game script suggests that's probably all they're going to have to do. 10-point favorites here versus New England's. Favorite stack, favorite something, favorite anything, you know, favorite thing to monitor. It's a Wednesday night here, John. As of right now, on a Wednesday night, what's your favorite stack? The one that you feel really, really good about. Of course, you have the right to change your mind going forward as we creep up to Sunday.
Again, I'm still toying around with FanDuel. DraftKings I have a better familiarity with this week. I don't know if I get there with Russ, but I do definitely like Sutton and Adams for sure as a little skinny stack. I don't know how much that game will get played at all. I want to see what it closes on Sunday morning, but definitely getting exposure to that and Browns Falcons, which will also be played. I just wonder to the extent of like who's going to play Drake London Cooper skinny stacks as well. So that's kind of the two games I lean at right now.
Same question, Rich.
Yeah, I got my eye on the Denver game, too, to kind of see. I feel like that's going to be something people get to inherently because of it's the late swap game. I'm also looking at outside of the Detroit, you know, health factor is Washington-Dallas for inherently gross reasons. But Washington's just one of these teams I'm going to kind of look at every week because their defense is just so god-awful, and they have good players on offense attached to bad quarterback. Like, their playmakers are legitimately good. So, like, they're just always a team I'm kind of looking at for stacking purpose of their games.
Who's your favorite Washington run back? Is it McLaurin?
For ceiling purposes, it's McLaurin, but like Curtis Samuel's been pretty cheap. You know, it's a fun Terry McLaurin fact. He has one catch in the first half of the first three games.
That is fun.
Yeah, the three best fantasy players you can own right now are fourth quarter Austin Eckler, fourth quarter Tyler Conklin, and second half Terry McLaurin.
Well, that was the NFL Pick 6 Show, Week 4. As I always say, like everybody knows at this point, they know who you guys are. But just in case, remind them, John, tell the people where they can find you, where they can get your content, where they can get you up on Twitter, all the things.
Yeah, and we're running a promo at 44.com for the next 48 hours. So by the time you're listening to this to Friday night, use the promo code SUBTIMBER, not September. It's very cute. SUBTIMBER, and you'll get 20%, 25% off. And that includes my waiver wire column. That includes all our DFS content. Basically everything we do, including the betting conversations we have and the sub. So in the Discord. SUBTIMBER, 25% off. That's your promo code.
Rich?
Ashtar Football. Lord Reeves on Twitter. We are also running a promo this week. The amount of points scored on Thursday night in the Bengals Dolphins game is the percentage you can get off on any subscription on the site. So cheer for a lot of points in that game. The first year we did it, there was 73 points scored. What? It was Jets Broncos. that was the game like Sam Bradford had like a 50-yard touchdown. I remember he was like bobbing and weaving through the line. Yeah, so cheer for a lot of points on Thursday if you want to read the worksheet or like just get like Warren's betting picks and stuff like that. But cheer for a lot of points Thursday.
Dude, the Bengals are going to put up like 50. You've seen those uniforms, right? Those
uniforms. Dude, I hope so. Those uniforms are so hot.
It's so clean. All right. We got to step aside and get out of here. Do appreciate y'all listening to the NFL Pick Six Show. That was Rich Rebar. That was John Daigle on behalf of producer Steve. Aaron Judge, who just hit his 61st home run. Coolio, I was Dean. Thanks for watching. We're out of here. Holler.